on Washington, Monday, February 23rd, 2009. Hello again from the nation's capital. I'm Greg Corumbus. In this edition, a slobbering love affair. That's the title of the new book by longtime broadcast journalist Bernie Goldberg, who takes aim at the media's coverage of the 2008 presidential campaign. Goldberg says it's a long way past simple media bias. He says the Fourth Estate has now turned to activism, and that's dangerous for our democracy. He'll tell us what Palin derangement syndrome is, and why the media cared a whole lot more about Joe the Plumber than it did Jeremiah Wright or Bill Ayers. Also in this edition, American Grit. Longtime political commentator and author Tony Blankley is with us to talk about his new book. In two installments, Mr. Blankley will explain why he believes it's time for another round of American nationalism, and he defines what that nationalism is and why it's important for America's survival and its ability to thrive here in the 21st century. He'll talk about his vigorous defense of the free markets and why domestic energy supply is critical to America's future. Mr. Blankley will also explain why he thinks it's time to bring back the military draft and the clamps he would put on the media during wartime. And the World Watch List. We'll talk with Jerry Dykstra of Open Doors USA about the nations around the world that are the worst persecutors of Christians, which nations top this dubious list, which ones are getting worse, and which ones are improving. All of that, plus a look at Monday's top news, follows our discussion with Bernard Goldberg, and that begins right now. My first guest in this edition is Bernard Goldberg, longtime CBS News correspondent who's also a reporter for Real Sports on HBO. His latest book is A Slobbering Love Affair, the true and pathetic story of the torrid romance between Barack Obama and the mainstream media. And Bernie, thanks so much for being with us.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
You chronicle basically the media coverage of the 2008 presidential campaign, and you begin by saying that even though Barack Obama was a darling of the media, promoting his election was actually more about the members of the media and an agenda that it kind of assuages white guilt even more than electing this particular person. Explain that.
Yeah, there's something called white liberal guilt, and I think the reason that the media sided and overwhelmingly decided they were going to support Barack Obama over Hillary Clinton, for instance, is because in media elite circles, liberal media elite circles, race trumps gender. Look, this isn't about the same old bias. This time, they moved from media bias to media activism. And the reason they did it is because they were on this noble mission, this historic mission, because Barack Obama was young, he was cool, he was black, and he was liberal. And they slobbered over him during the entire campaign. They made him into a kind of messiah. And if we had just inaugurated the first black president who was a conservative Republican, there would have been no slobbering.
Bernie, you make the case in the book that bias is not a good thing, but activism is dangerous. Explain for our listeners the difference.
Well, the only reason that Thomas Jefferson and the boys gave the press constitutional protections, you know, with no checks and balances, is because they realized that we need a press to keep an eye on government. That was the basic thought, because government is powerful and it could really do a lot of damage. Well, if virtually nobody trusts the media anymore, and there's a poll in the book that indicates, a Poll Research Center poll, that indicates that 70% of people said that the media, most reporters, want Barack Obama to win the election. That was a simple question that was asked. Who do you think most reporters want to win the election? 70% said Barack Obama. 90% of Republicans, but 62% of Democrats and Independents said that. So if virtually nobody trusts the media anymore, what happens when these watchdogs bark? Nobody's going to pay attention. And that could be really dangerous.
Bernie, you mentioned the fact that despite years of the mainstream media going to bat on a number of occasions for the Clintons, when it came to Hillary Clinton versus Barack Obama, they definitely sided with Barack Obama. And as you mentioned earlier, race trump gender in this campaign. So when it came time for Sarah Palin to join the story at the Republican convention and beyond, they really started to heap the scorn upon Sarah Palin. But as you point out, it's not necessarily about her readiness for office. It was about her story, actually, in your opinion.
Yeah, that's right. Some people like her, some don't. Let's put that aside. But the viciousness with which she was attacked was disproportionate to anything she had ever done to anybody. And I think it wasn't simply her conservative politics, although that was certainly part of it. But I think liberal feminists were outraged that this was the most prominent woman in America? It wasn't supposed to be this way. It was supposed to be a liberal feminist who was the most prominent woman in America. But yet, you know, it was Sarah Palin, and they detested the fact that she was so much like an ordinary American. She had a big family, five kids. Well, sophisticated women don't have five kids. And who names their kids Track and Piper and Trig and all? No, what kind of person does that? And she had a baby with Down syndrome. Hadn't she ever heard of abortions? The same kind of people who think that if you eat at a Red Lobster, you're committing a crime against humanity, the very same kind of liberal elites detested Sarah Palin, detested her, because she was so ordinary in many ways. And I think that's who they really hate, ordinary Americans. I mean, there was one writer who said that the rise of Sarah Palin was akin to the rise of Nazism in Germany. This is crazy. Somebody else said, what's the difference between Sarah Palin and a Muslim fundamentalist? Lipstick. All right, we get the joke, except that Muslim fundamentalists kill you if they disagree with you. Did Sarah Palin deserve any of that?
Bernie, you point out in the book that there was a legitimate debate about her readiness for office. She had a couple of rocky interviews, again, with the mainstream media. But you're suggesting that even if she came off completely polished and qualified, the story about her family and her politics and just how she doesn't fit the feminist mold, she basically would have been treated the same way?
I think so. I think so. I think she was alien to liberals in general, liberal feminists in particular. Now, look. If she was the same Sarah Palin and she came from Alaska and she still didn't go to Harvard, Yale, or Princeton, but wound up at the University of Idaho, but was pro-choice, that would have made a difference, no question about it. But when she was pro-life and she had all these other things that they didn't like about her, that was just too much for them. Look, as I say, some people like her, some don't. I'm willing to just put that aside, but the hatred... I mean, in the book, I call it PDS, Palin Derangement Syndrome.
Another thing you focus on in the book is how the media is curiously very interested in certain stories and not at all interested in other stories. It talks about how the Acorn story and their multiple states of fraudulent voter registration that remains under investigation didn't seem to get much attention. Neither did the Obama connection with Bill Ayers. But when Joe the Plumber confronted Barack Obama, there was a great media investigation of him.
Yeah, the media spent more time, if you want to go back and check it, on the financial records and the taxes of Joe the Plumber than they paid on the tax situation of the man who became Secretary of the Treasury. Something really wrong about that.
In terms of the connections, you devote a chapter to the Jeremiah Wright connection and how the media kind of got dragged into that basically by new media, the Internet, Fox News, and that sort of thing. How did they end up handling that and eventually kind of showing Obama as a victim rather than someone who ought to be scrutinized more closely?
Well, in the beginning, we didn't know who Barack Obama was. He came out of nowhere. Came out of nowhere, and he wanted to be president of the United States. But we did know that he had a minister who he said was his spiritual advisor, was his friend for 20 years. He sat in that church for 20 years, and not just on Christmas and Easter, but was a fairly regular member of that church. The minister married him and his wife and baptized his children. So I think the Reverend Wright became an important person to look into. Who is this person that this candidate for president says is his spiritual mentor? The Reverend Wright was never important because we think Barack Obama believed the same crazy things that the Reverend Wright believed. He was never important because we think Barack Obama thinks that white people created AIDS to kill black people or that our chickens came home to roost on 9/11. But it's a legitimate question to ask ask Barack Obama. Why did you sit in that church for 20 years? Why did you do it? And when he said, I never heard any of the things that were on the tapes, I don't know. I just find that hard to believe. 20 years you're sitting in the church and you never heard any of these crazy things that this demagogue said from the pulpit? I guess it's possible. It's just hard to believe.
We're talking with Bernie Goldberg, author of A Slobbering Love Affair, The True and Pathetic Story of the Torrid Romance Between Barack Obama and the Mainstream Media. And Bernie, you point out in the book, and this shows some objectivity, I believe, here, as you say that John McCain didn't lose because of the media. It may have cost him a point or two, but in the end, the media didn't determine this election. So even if there is this huge predominant bias, as you mentioned before, if it turns into activism, it's a problem. But if it doesn't really change people's minds, how significant is it?
Well, yeah, I make clear that as much as the media tried to elect Barack Obama, it was John McCain that defeated John McCain. He was not a good candidate. It was George Bush who helped defeat John McCain. The president's popularity ratings were in the gutter. It was the Republican Party that defeated John McCain. They took power in 2000, and they said they were the grown-ups, and they spent money like Imelda Marcos in a shoe store. And it was history that defeated John McCain. Traditionally in this country, we don't elect the same party three times in a row. But it's still important that the media cross the line from bias into activism, because they are the only institution, as I say, that is supposed to keep an eye on the government. It is a big, powerful government. And if we don't trust the media, if we don't believe them, if we think that they're in the tank for this guy or for that guy or for this cause or for that cause, then when the media sounds the alarm, I don't think anybody's going to pay attention. And then if someday, and this isn't science fiction, if someday a really bad guy comes along, a demagogue, but a real bad guy, and he starts out his campaign by telling a crowd of Americans, look over there, you see those people? Those are the people in the media. They're out to stop me because they're really out to stop you. Everybody's going to believe that because nobody trusts the media. And then that bad guy, that demagogue, will be able to get away with murder. That's why what the media did this time was really, really bad.
Bernie, unfortunately, we'll have to call time there. We thank you very much for your time today.
Thanks very much.
Bernard Goldberg, the book is A Slobbering Love Affair, The True and Pathetic Story of the Torrid Romance Between Barack Obama and the Mainstream Media. This is Dateline Washington.